warmer from Evo! Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Heaps with myself, Greg Heaps Peterson, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you as we're going to be joined in segment number two by one of our good friends, Chris Sheehan, who does such great work over at WBAL in Baltimore. We'll get a little bit of a temperature check on what we've all seen from the teams out there in the great state of Maryland. We'll take a look at the Big Ten. We'll take a look at the Coastal Conference. A few teams have stood out to him. We do have to give some flowers to Seton Hall. I know that myself and Ian both been very, very impressed by what we've seen out there, some of the surprises, and just what sort of gauntlet it is in the Big Ten right now. In the final segment, going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Monday as we had some bank shots, and unfortunately that is only six games for today, but we are still going to get you guys covered, and there is still definitely money to be made, and we're going to look to make that on this Monday as we hit some bank shots. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, whatever you for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter /xtimeline at gunet_81. Keep in mind, Larzium, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. I did actually get in one Twitter/X question today, and unfortunately, I don't have the world's greatest answer, but this is from @frontwraps on the old Twitter/X. He was asking if there's any sites that I recommend for having first half college basketball stats or any platform that I have, and unfortunately, I have been looking for this for years, and if someone has this, please do let me know. I have never been able to find betting splits in terms of first half. Now, team rankings, they do list like the raw points scored in the first half, the differential by half as well, so you can get a little bit of something there. If you're looking for like the raw scoring, maybe there's one team that has a bigger differential in the first half or the second half. That's something that you are able to take a look at, but if you're looking for betting splits, if you're looking at like rebounds, turnovers, anything other than just raw points, I just have never been able to find it. And I wish someone was out there. If you have an analytics site and you're able to break down first half and second half splits, you do let me know, because you guys notice if you've listened to this podcast for, I mean, one day, a month, a year, multiple years, that I always stick to the full game. That's the biggest reason why, because it's so gosh darn hard to find those splits. I mean, hopefully I'm preaching to the choir here, and hopefully you guys aren't looking at me as like a baby, but I've been trying to be able to do so, and if you're trying to break down half by half splits for college basketball teams for 365 teams, you're not going to be able to do it, Bentley. There's just not enough hours in a day. Like, you can try as hard as you can, but it's just not going to happen. So if anyone has that, let me know, because I can find the raw points scored, points allowed. Team rankings actually does a really good job of that, but going beyond the basics of that, I unfortunately do not. But what I do have is a lot to say about what we saw in college basketball on Sunday. Let's take a look back at it. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
Games from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy Recap.
How about an absolute dump trucking by Nebraska, who's now 9-0, 71-50. They take it to Creighton. Creighton goes 8 of 33 from 3. Nebraska ball goes 10 of 17 from the outside. Bricky Bautista only 6 points, but he was able to slide the team with 13 rebounds. Rink Mass, 20 points, 5 rebounds. He was rock solid for this Nebraska team. They did a nice job in terms of winning the turnover battle 12-8. They win the rebound battle 39-35. And for Creighton, just been a little bit of a rough start to the season for them, to say the least, and that was a very nice rock solid win out there. Alabama, a very easy win and cover over UTSA. No meat meat for these Roadrunners, as 97-55. Alabama just ran over the Roadrunners, and Alabama 16-57 from 3-point range, so they weren't even warm from 3 on this day. Latrell Wrightsell goes 2-14 from 3 for only 10 points, but you had London Jameson off the bench, supply 20 points. He goes 2-6 from 3, and then Jaleel Bethea, a former very highly touted recruit of Miami, he's getting into going 21 points, 5-10 from the outside, and for the Roadrunners, they lost a turnover battle 18-5. That is not really going to help out the cause. LSU was undefeated going into Sunday. Undefeated no more, 82-58. Texas Tech, they get the job done at Texas Tech, 13-27 from 3. Christian Anderson, a really nice game, 5-9 from 3-point. She supplies the team with 27 points. JT Toppin, another double-double, only 11 points, but 15 rebounds, and for LSU, 4 of 24 from 3-point range. The Jalen Reed injury, injury. Right now, reigning very supreme here, Dedon Thomas was able to supply the team with 13 points, but LSU absolutely dumped on the glass, 48-33. So nice win from Texas Tech out there at the Border War. Kansas, who they get back Darren Peterson and they get back to their winning ways, 80-60 the final. Missouri has been a high-powered offense, but just 7-27 from three and 11-21 at the free throw line for Mr. Peterson in his return. 17 points in 23 minutes. Looked rock solid there, but I know it's all about the Kansas rebounding as well. They win the rebound battle, 41-35 for Kansas. They do a solid job winning the turnover battle, 10-9, as well as Bryson Tiller was able to supply 13 points. Flory Badunga down low, he had 2 blocks, 11 boards, 10 points, and Trey White, 20 points, 13 rebounds. So a really good effort out of Kansas, and how about a rock solid effort out of North Carolina? They completely shut down Georgetown in the second half. It was 83 points in the first half. If you, like me, had the over, a combined 59 points in the second half wasn't great. 81-61. North Carolina is able to persevere as Henry Vassar, double-double, 18 points, 15 rebounds. Caleb Wilson, a double-double, 20 points, 14 rebounds out of him for Georgetown. They go just 4 of 23 from three-point range. Georgetown wins the turnover battle 9-5. They do lose that rebound battle 48-36. And for Georgetown, KJ Lewis was able to slide the team with 17 points, but they've got a few injuries in the front court that were a little bit costly. Vincent Iuchukwu still out of the fold, so that was a little bit less than tremendous, and that was a little bit of a rough one. Rough one if you lay between 14-14.5 points, by the way, with Quinnipiac up 20 points with a 151 remaining. They win, but they, on the closing line of about 14, a lot of spots, push 72-58. The final is Ryder. They go 6-14 from 3 after they had been shooting 25% from 3-point range coming into this one. A nice quality under here, though, as Quinnipiac, they only shoot 43% from floor, and Quinnipiac did a nice job winning that turnover battle by a count of 13-8. We did see quite a bit of Metro Atlantic play going down on Sunday, along with a pair of military academies going at it, as Air Force, a quality cover against Navy, 61-56 the final. Shock, shock, surprise, surprise. You got an under as Air Force only goes 6-25 from 3, but they did a solid job being able to hold up on glass. They only lose a battle 36-33, and for Air Force, they've been able to get a little bit of something-something out of Cam Sanders. He was able to spy the team with 15 points in this one. Saw a nice little upset win for Northwestern State, 76-68. They were able to take down Southeast Louisiana. And for Green Bay, perhaps it's, oh no, we suck again, as Wright State absolutely takes it to them, 86-58. The final, as I mean, even with having Marcus Hall, their top scorer back, UW Green Bay unable to do a heck of a lot on offense. And Wright State looking really good right now. They win the rebound battle 33-29. They do a rock solid job in terms of winning that turnover battle 18-8, just 6-27 from 3-point range for Wright State. But the freshman, Michael Cooper, he did go 3-7 from the outside. He was able to supply 23 points, so a good quality performance out there. And how about a quality performance on the road from UNLV? They get a 75-74 road win over Samford, and it's a Samford team that I've actually liked what I've seen out of them thus far this season. And for UNLV, way that they got it done, Kamani Hamilton, he was able to find his way to the free throw line with 2 seconds remaining. He goes 1-2 at the charity stripe. That turns out to be the difference maker for a UNLV team that is so very banged up. We have yet to see Miles Shea thus far this season. Emmanuel Steven, he did make his debut though, and he made a big impact. 18 points, 10 rebounds for UNLV, only 3 of 10 from 3-point range, but they were able to do a nice job in terms of winning that turnover battle 16-14, as well as for Samford, 17-27 at the free throw line. That turned out to be very, very costly for them in this one. You also saw Belmont all over Middle Tennessee, 83-62. Final in this one, as for Belmont, 10-23 from 3. They were up 4 points at the half, and then they outscore Middle Tennessee in the second half by a count of 48-31. For Middle Tennessee, 8 of 38 from 3-point range. Yeah, Jevin Carter go 3 of 11 from the outside, so the rest of the team went 5 of 27 from 3-point range. For Middle Tennessee, they actually do a solid job playing even up in the turnover battle, 8-8, but when you go 8 of 38 from 3-point range, yeah, that's typically not going to be going the world's greatest for you, but I mean, this was pretty rock solid, as St. Thomas, they were able to take it to Weber State, 88-65 the final. St. Thomas still grabbing absolutely no offensive rebounds whatsoever, but you don't need those offensive rebounds when you shoot 57% from the floor for Weber State. They also lost a turnover battle 17-10, so the Tommies, they were able to do a nice job going out there, being able to get the job done in that one. And how about St. Louis? They just continue to be oh so efficient on offense, 107-65. They take it to Central Michigan, as for Central Michigan, they go 7-21 from 3. And for St. Louis, 11 11 of 29 from three-point. Robbie Avila only had 6 points in 19 minutes in this game, but they really didn't need him when you had Kellen Thames come off the bench, give you 17 points. For St. Louis, they really did a nice job on the turnover front as well. They win that battle 13-4. Their main kryptonite this year has been the turnover, so a very good showing out there. And then how about a nice showing from Hofstra? We'll talk a little bit more about the Coastal Conference with Chris Sheehan in segment number two, but for Pittsburgh, they lose 80-73 despite going 10 of 23 from three-point range. You had, for this Hofstra team, a massive game from Cruz Davis. He cruised his way to 36 points, 7 assists for Hofstra. There he did a nice job winning the turnover battle, 10-7. They play even up on the glass, and for Pittsburgh, even though they go 19 of 22 at the free throw line, Hofstra did a really good job with Cruz Davis being able to lead the way, and they do find a way to be able to persevere, get the job done out there, also being able to persevere and get the job done. How about a nice win from Central Florida, 86-61 all over Towson, as Towson, they were down 20 points at the half, and they just could not claw their way back. We'll also talk to Chris about this team as well, but for Central Florida, 19-21 at the free throw line, and right now, Central Florida has been really good on the glass. You had Michael Stillwell provide 15 points, 6 boards, and I mean, Themis Folks, who came over from UW-Milwaukee along Stillwell, 20 points, 8 assists, so a nice rock-solid quality performance from them. You also had a quality performance from the Dons of San Francisco, 65-62. They take down Mississippi State. As for Mississippi State, they go just 8 of 28 from 3-point range, and Mississippi State has had a tough time on the turnover front this year. They actually clean that up. They win the turnover battle 6-5, and San Francisco only goes 7 of 29 from 3, 6 of 10 at the free throw line, but Mississippi State went 2 of 8 at the free throw line. You want to know where they lost that game? Yeah, there you go. And Tyrone Riley, 16 points for San Francisco, was a slog of a game, and San Francisco, they find a way to win the slog. And then in a game that was anything but a slog, you saw Sam Iamford be able to take down Cornell by a count of 93-90, as for Samford, they were trailing by 8 points at the half, but they find a way to get it done, despite the fact that Cornell went 13 of 37 from 3-point range. Cooper Norrett was able to supply 23 points for Cornell, but the way that Samford was able to get it done was by being able to just find a way to get to the free throw line. 23 of 33 at the charity stripe. Dylan Faulkner, who he followed his coach Lenny Acuff on over from Lipscomb, he went 9-10 from the floor. He supplied the team with 23 points. He also had 30 points out of Jaden Booth as well. And for Cornell, they were able to go 13 to 37 from three, but they shot less than 50% on their 2-point shots. In Samford, they went 55% from the floor. So they do find a way to be able to persevere. And if you had the over in the SMU versus Texas A&M game, well, be thinking your lucky stars that it went to overtime, 93-80. SMU outscores Texas A&M 16-3 in overtime. SMU just 5 of 22 from 3-point range, but Jerron Pierre finds a way to put points upon the board, 13 of 21 from the floor, 35 big points. SMU actually loses the rebound battle by a count of 42-37, but A&M was just as cold, 8 of 34 from 3-point range. For A&M, 22 of 34 at the free throw line, 26 of 28 for SMU. Always be taking a look at those free throw numbers. And then TCU, they do find a way to be able to persevere in another game out there in the great state of Texas over North Texas by a count of 65-55. North Texas was up 37-21 at the half, but North Texas just 3 of 13 from 3. TCU even worse, 3 of 17 from the outside, but for TCU, they win the rebound battle 38-25, and for TCU, they had on their side Xavier Edmonds, who was able to supply 16 points, 8 boards, and for this TCU bunch, they do commit 17 turnovers in this game, but the rebounding advantage got it done for them. And then in the nightcap, Gonzaga, they, on the closing number, were laying in some places as high as like 47 points, maybe a little bit more or less, depending upon your book, but they find a way to cover all numbers over North Florida. How about 109-58, the final, as for North Florida, 10 of 38 from 3-point range. They lose a turnover battle by a count of 18-12, and Gonzaga, 10 of 18 from 3-point range. Mario Saint-Cyprien, he goes a perfect 4 of 4 from the floor, 4 of 4 from 3-point range. Great enough. He huffed and puffed, and he scored 24 points, tying Grant Foster 19 points off the bench. A dominant performance from Gonzaga. And if you're taking a look at trend-wise, what we're all getting in college basketball right now, it is still a case where the under has the lead on overs, as the under rate in college basketball is hitting at 50.9%, 775 unders to 747 unders, with favorites hitting on the spread at about 51. 29%, 782, 735, and 23 against the spread. And if you take a look at the last 7 days in college basketball, it has been favorites galore, hitting at about 52.5%, 152, 137, and 6 against the spread, while the over sitting at 50.5%, 148 overs, 145 unders, and along the way, I believe that we've gotten two pushes as well. So that's where we're seeing college basketball right now, and that's where we're getting trend-wise coming up next. How about if we do chat it up with our good friend in Chris Chan? He does great work over at WBAL in Baltimore, and it's all powered by Better. Better is making it better to be able to dive in on daily fantasy, because when you go to better.app and you type in the promo code of VSIMPOD, that is B-E-T-R, and then the promo code of V-S-I-M-P-O-D, you get $10 free. All you need to do, pick on a player and whether or not they're going to go over or under their stat line. Where jurisdictions have it, you're able to bet on money line spreads and all that good stuff as well over at BETR.app. And coming up next, we are going to have that great chat with Chris right here on Chris Kissing. It's myself, David Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast. Side edges college basketball season? Well, VSiN experts use CBB Analytics, the most comprehensive college basketball analytics platform in the world. See injury impact on and off data, clutch time performance metrics, first versus second half splits, and so much more. Utilize the promo code of VSiN, that is V-S-I-N, to get $30 off and find your betting edge over at cbbanalytics.com. That is cbbanalytics, all one word, .com. For anyone that is new to VSIN, well, I wish you a friendly hello. This is an attention to anyone that is new to VSIN, because you're able to get some free stuff with our daily newsletter. It's a great way to catch up on everything that's happening in the sports betting world. It's delivered straight to your inbox every single morning. VSIN's newsletter offers picks, data, strategies for the day's betting menu, and so much more. Sign up for free today over at VSIN.com/newsletter. That's VSIN.com/newsletter, and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That is VSIN.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSIN. And we're back here, love you, Las Vegas, for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by this man, as we've got Chris Sheehan aboard. He does great work over at WBAL in Baltimore, taking a look at a little bit of everything. You need the news happenings out there in the Charm City, he's got you covered. If you're looking for some college basketball, he's got you. I know he does a great job on the hockey front as well, and for those that remember the baseball podcast, Baseball Betting Show, always does a great job on that as well. You're able to follow him on the old Twitter / at the Big Chee Show. That is C-H-E-E on Chee before show. And Chris, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Greg, thank you for the kind words. Yes, love talking baseball with you. As you know, hoping for a better season out of the Orioles. And it's been a tough year for the Ravens now after the loss Sunday, 16% chance to make the postseason. So we are looking ahead here in Maryland to the Maryland Terrapins basketball team, and looking ahead to a matchup against Michigan, which is going to be a certainly difficult one, I would imagine, considering we just saw the Wolverines absolutely pulverize the Rutgers Scarlet Knights. You know, this is a basketball state. Baltimore is a basketball town, and certainly exciting times, perhaps under this Buzz Williams era, a different brand of basketball, if you will. But, you know, still playing kind of the same way with bigs getting it done down there in College Park.
Yep, and it is going to be interesting to see how Maryland fares in the Big Ten, because I do think that Maryland is playing some solid basketball. I know that the record says 6-4, but they go to the players' era out there in lovely Las Vegas, and well, when you're going up against Gonzaga and Alabama, that's not necessarily the world's easiest task. They've already got a win on the resume against Marquette, and that Georgetown loss is not aging the worst as well. But how do you just take a look at this Maryland team right now? Because overall, I think that this is a solid team. The problem is it just looks like this Big Ten is so much improved, with Michigan and Purdue looking like top teams in college basketball. Michigan State has been rock solid. Nebraska all of a sudden has things rocking and rolling as well. And this just looks like a conference from top to bottom that is not going to have any easy nights. Not even teams like Rutgers and Northwestern are playing bad basketball either.
Yeah, and you've got a Maryland team that just lost almost by 20 points to Iowa. Understand that it was an away game, but it was 18 turnovers for this Maryland Terps team. So certainly was sloppy, and if this is a team that is going to get behind, they certainly are going to have a difficult time coming back, considering they're shooting, 31% from three so far this year. Last I saw in the ranking, that's below 250th. So that's going to be difficult. Yeah, like I said, to catch up for Terrell Payne, their leading scorer. He's a 6'9", 250-pound guy. So, yeah, he can dominate teams like Wagner when he had 30 points going along with 10 rebounds. But he certainly needs to improve at the free throw line. We know that. 9 of 18 against Iowa. I don't think he's ever going to be in the 90% shooting from the charity stripe. But, 14 of 20 was his career best against Wagner. So this is a guy that is going to need to deliver for Buzz Williams. He was somebody, I mentioned it in the very beginning there, and this was pointed out by Jeff Ehrman, who covers the Terps here locally, continued Maryland's semi-recent run of excellent bigs, Derek Queen, Jalen Smith, Bruno Fernando. And then he said that if they had a Payne-level player in the backcourt, they'd be in decent shape, and I pretty much agree with that, considering we've seen some of their guard play this year not go so well. I mean, Darius Adams, he's a young kid. Buzz Williams at one point said he really likes him, but he said he liked his spirit and teachability more maybe than he likes his game. I don't know that I would want to hear that necessarily, but when you're a freshman, 6'5", 175, he still needs to put on some weight. But yeah, this is a team that is able to rise up to the occasion. We saw that when they were able to take down a Marquette team a couple of weeks ago. You had Coit scoring 19, Isaiah Watt scoring 18. So they've got a little bit of depth there, but that Iowa game really exposed some of their weaknesses they've got with their guard play. I mean, Darius Adams and Miles Rice, I don't think they made a field goal until less than 8 minutes to go in the second half against Iowa, when Maryland was pretty much out of it at that point. So yeah, they need to get some, better scoring from their guards, but this is a team, as you said, is going to be having a daunting schedule playing a tough Big Ten conference. Rutgers, we're going to see how Rutgers looks when they've got a matchup against Seton Hall this upcoming week. That's always a big one in the Garden State, but we just saw, again, Rutgers lose to Michigan 101-60. So, yeah, we'll see how Maryland does. I really like this Farrell Payne kid. He's used to Buzz Williams in the system, followed him from Texas A&M, played 2 years in Minnesota. He's a guy that's going to be a big-time help for this Maryland team in terms of toughness and the way that Buzz Williams wants to play. You and I talked about this preseason. He's a guy that the players have said during practice, they come out and it's physical and it hurts. It is not a lot of finesse play out of Maryland, and I think that's how they're going to be able to compete in this conference, mucking it up and playing physically, because we know teams like Purdue and Iowa can certainly shoot it.
No question about it. And how much do you just take a look at this Big Ten as being just a melting pot of different styles? Because you mentioned what Michigan was able to do over the weekend. It's a Rutgers team that likes to slow things down, and Michigan still got over 100 points against them. Purdue is a slow team, but they're a very efficient team. You've got a Wisconsin team that has sped things up. You've got now the West Coast teams with the likes of UCLA, Oregon. They all play a unique style. And I do think that when it comes to Maryland, if they can only rely upon one different brand of basketball and one different way to be able to win games, I think that that's a little bit of a detriment, because there's just so many different teams in the Big Ten, and one night you're going to be facing a team of a full of bigs like in Illinois with Tomislava Vicic and company, and then the next night you're going to face a whole bunch of versatile guards. And I think that that just makes the Big Ten even more challenging and makes it all the more difficult. I do think that in the Big Ten it's just so daunting and brutal with how night in, night out, it's a complete and utter gauntlet with no nights off.
Yeah, and you were talking about versatile guards, and I had to think about a guy from Prince George's County, Rodney Rice, who has bounced around now from team school to school, started at Virginia Tech, then he came to Maryland with Evan Willard taking the job at Villanova. He finds himself at USC, and I watched a lot of that USC game when they just eked out the victory against Seton Hall, and that was a big-time win for this USC team, who is doing pretty good as far as their Big Ten is concerned going into play there. But we know that Rodney Rice suffered that injury. They are a team that's going to be at an interesting crossroads as they reach the finals of the Maui Invitational, but it come at a cost. We'll see how that ends up playing out. But yeah, when we look at a Big Ten conference as well, too, Purdue is always going to be a team with Matt Painter at the helm there that's going to be strong offensively, defensively. You're looking at another team that I was taking a look at, and Purdue, I also want to mention, too, they can certainly shoot three. They are Sunday at least 40.2%. That's the best in the Big Ten as far as I'm concerned from shooting from beyond the arc. Northwestern's a team that I always find to kind of be a little bit interesting because, you know, they got a guy like Nick Martinelli, who I know that he's been on that team for a couple of years now, a little bit of stable with the Northwestern Wildcats. So they're a team that will probably be in the mix when it comes to play. And when you're looking at stability too, and I go right back to Purdue, that's Braden Smith for you. I mean, we just saw his performance, albeit in a pretty bad loss to Iowa State this past weekend, number 10 Iowa State. But, you know, I see the 6 turnovers here. I didn't totally watch that game personally, but, you know, that's a season high for Braden Smith. So that's not going to be the norm for a guy like that. The games prior, I did catch some of the one that he played against Rutgers where they were able to win by 16 points. That was at the Rack. I don't think they call it the Rack anymore. I think it's Jersey Mike's Arena there. But
it's
yeah,
the Rack
was
to all of us.
Yeah, it's the Rack, originally the Rack, but that was a big performance from him where he went 4 of 8 from three. He hasn't been the, you know, best shooter from 3-point land, but again, this is a guy who's able to facilitate. He had 4 steals in that Iowa State game, too, which was impressive. I mean, that's a season high for him. So, yeah, I like what I'm seeing out of Purdue year in and year out. And the rest of the conference, you know, Indiana, you'd imagine, is going to be continuing on the upswing. They're a team that's coming back to relevance. And with the emergence of these teams in the West Coast now, the UCLAs and USCs, it's really awesome to see, you know, it become truly a national conference. And then Michigan's just still a team that is so strong and such a force. You look at their game log, I mean, working Gonzaga, absolutely taking it to San Diego State. So yeah, I don't know where I see their losses coming. They've got a big one coming up against Villanova and Kevin Willard. So, and then, yeah, Maryland, as I mentioned, Saturday, you know, then they'll kind of hit the heart of their, you know, schedule with teams like Penn State, Wisconsin coming on. State's an interesting one because they had that VCU coach coming over, and now it seems like they're kind of rolling here a little bit, albeit they haven't really, seems like, played anybody really that tough. But they'll be playing Indiana away here coming up this week, so that should be fun. And then I can't miss out on Michigan State. Watch some of that game against Duke this past weekend. A lot of fun. No, they lost by 6 there. But, you know, when you've got Duke and Boozer absolutely working the boards down there, that was a good performance out of the young man. But you've seen out of Michigan State getting a big-time win against Iowa, who I've been praising here. They beat Kentucky, beat Arkansas. So Michigan State, you know, we've seen them kind of not have the strongest starts. And then they really kind of put it together when it comes to the NCAA tournament. They're off to a strong start this year, so I'm interested to see how they play, especially against Penn State coming up this week.
Yep, absolutely. And we are going to have a lot of fun action that's going to be coming up here in the next few weeks, as we saw a Big Ten play that is going to be going down, as I know that your Maryland Terrapins are going to be facing off against Michigan on Saturday. That's going to be probably a little bit of a rough one, to say the least, but we shall see what happens there, as Chris Sheehan, who does great work over at WBAL in Baltimore, is joining me on Coast to Coast Hoops. And I know that in passing you mentioned Seton Hall, and I mean, that's one of the teams I've been most impressed by here thus far this season, the job that Sheen Holloway is doing. And I think we were chatting about this before the start of the season, that neither of us had a lot of expectations for them, so that's been tremendous. And just who have been a few surprise teams for you? Because for me, Seton Hall is certainly towards the top of the list. LLC was going to be on that list, but then they really took it on the chin against Texas Tech. But I do feel like there's been a lot of nice surprises, including quite a few teams out there in the Big Ten, like even Michigan. I thought that they'd be good, but I mean, how good they and so many others have been in the Big Ten has really been a surprise to me.
Yeah, I would say with this Seton Hall team, I've had conversations with you before. I think I like them the most. This is where my fanhood is. It's with Seton Hall basketball. And I was so pessimistic coming into the season. Wasn't really sure if I was going to watch a ton of these games because, yeah, they're coming off a year where they were 7-25. And it's not like I lost hope in Shaheen Holloway. I mean, he's a legend within the program. But boy, I mean, did not expect this start. Their only loss was, as I mentioned, that 2-point loss in Maui against USC, where they really blew it at the end there. They really were in control of that game, most of it. But outside of that, they took care of business against Kansas State, number 38 now, improving 11 spots, I saw in KenPom on this past Sunday. And there's only Villanova, St. John's, and UConn higher from the Big East, predicted to be last in the Big Ten amongst the coaches, or Big East, I should say, amongst the coaches. And this was a team Shaheen Holloway mentioned after that tournament in Hawaii that he said his players' legs were dead. That's what he said to the Asbury Park Post. And then they were able to absolutely get it done against a Kansas State team who's got the leading scorer in the country. So this is a Seton Hall team totally changed over, as are a lot of college basketball teams from year to year now these days. But, you know, AJ Stat McCray, Elijah Fisher, these guys have showed up big time. Stat McCray, only 3 of 15 from the floor, but I go back to the inconsistencies with Maryland and Farrell Payne at the free throw line. Well, Stat McCray made all of his 9 free throw attempts. So you're able to make those, the most of those opportunities, you can get wins like that. So I've been really impressed with them. South Carolina in the SEC, I've caught a little bit of their action. I know that they've done a pretty good job as far as what they've been able to bring to the table. And Nebraska, too, you talked about them being a big time force in the Big Ten. They're 8-0 so far, taking care of.
As we're doing this, they're going to be 9-0. They're blowing out Creighton as we're doing this podcast.
There you go. And they took care of an Oklahoma squad as well. I won't say take care. It was a close game. It was a high scoring game, but Oklahoma's off to a good start, beating a team like Marquette, who, you know, I'm surprised to see Marquette now take a couple of losses here with Shaka Smart at the helm. But we'll see how it plays out the rest of the year with them. They're 5-5 team. They've scheduled some tough ones, playing against the likes of Wisconsin, Dayton, who we all know can bring it. And so we'll see how Marquette does now that they're going to be playing the likes of Georgetown, who Georgetown's a program, you know, I didn't really know what to make when they got rid of Patrick Ewing and what they were going to be like under Ed Cooley, but seems as if he is bringing the right type of talented players to Washington, D.C., which where they were not able to acquire for quite some time. I know they went on that run during COVID and won the Big East tournament and were able to make it into the NCAA tournament, but tough going there for Georgetown attendance-wise. Now, as you know, I worked in Capital One Arena. I would see the crowds coming to Georgetown games. It would start the beginning of the school year. The kids would come after that. Forget it. Because they would just sort of wither away. And, you know, Georgetown got a big win against the Clemson team, who there were, you know, high expectations for. They've been a strong team. They're 7-2 this year. So you got to like what they're bringing to the table. But I would say, all fanhood aside, I am stunned with how Seton Hall has played this year. Now, again, big time matchup against Rutgers this week. This is big for the state. And both of these teams have kind of been middling since 2019-2020. Rutgers is 108-91, Seton Hall 114-87. Rutgers has defeated them 3 of the last 5 meetings. Should be a packed house. I don't exactly know the venue it'll be in, but either whether it's in Newark or whether it's in New Brunswick, Seton Hall getting that quad 2 road victory against Kansas State, that was big for them. And so I'm really surprised with how they've been playing so far this year. And because I also follow Towson, I went there, Greg, as you know, I was surprised that they got whooped up on by UCF like they did this past Sunday. I don't know a ton about UCF, admittedly, but, you know, we were supposed to be a team, you know, pick number one in the conference going in. To get beat down that bad by UCF is not encouraging. But we'll see how it goes once conference play starts.
Yep, absolutely. And I was actually going to ask you about that as well. What do you make out of the Towson team right now? Because we've seen some very encouraging signs from them, but they do lose that game to UC San Diego, where UC San Diego could not miss from three. I think that they went 16 of 25 from three-point range. And they do lose to Central Florida, but obviously that's a Central Florida team that I think is going to be solid in the Big 12. Maybe not necessarily one of the upper echelon teams, but I think that it's interesting to see how the CAA is shaking out right now, because with Charleston, they've been one of the bigger disappointments in all of college basketball. We did see Hofstra get a really nice triumph on Sunday against Pittsburgh. It's a Pittsburgh team that's sort of flailing, but you'll take that if you're Hofstra. But it feels like it's been very much a mixed bag for the CAA with, in my opinion, a few disappointments thus far.
Towson goes as Tyler Tejada goes. He's been with this program now, coming up on his 3rd year, junior from Teaneck, New Jersey. Time performance in their victory against Cornell in their last game. That was the game where he finally went off from three-point land. He had been, you know, kind of middling to start the season, only making 1 three-pointer in each of his first 4 games. And then he went through a stretch where they beat Rhode Island and Liberty, but he only didn't knock down a single three-pointer in that game. But this is a guy who is still their leading scorer, averaging almost 20 points. He's got 20 or more in each of the last three games. And yeah, this was a performance against UC San Diego, as you mentioned, was in the Terry's Chocolate ESPN Events Invitational, if I'm not mistaken. And
yes, sir.
Towson team that, you know, we shoot a lot of three-pointers, no doubt about it. But as you mentioned, UC San Diego, the Tritons, 16 of 25 in that matchup. They were 7 of 15 from the free throw line, and we were 14 of 17. But still, it was a UC San Diego victory, and it will be a Towson team that certainly has an easier path making an NCAA tournament for the first time since 1991. This is not the same conference. It's not even the same name as a conference. It's the Coastal now. So, yeah, we're playing teams like Hampton, Monmouth. These are beatable opponents. Charleston, as you mentioned, has been the disappointment, but they've been the cream of the conference over the past couple of years. You see UNC Wilmington's always pretty tough, but North Carolina A&T, we've been able to get past pretty easily. Stony Brook, I know that they're off to a pretty decent start at 6-3, but they just lost to Duquesne. You know, I don't know how good the Dukes are, so we'll see.
Pretty solid. Dukes are a good team.
Okay, all right. So we'll see how Stony Brook ends up being as far as a opponent for this Towson bunch. But yeah, I would say Towson should still be, despite the loss to UCF. And when you lose to a team like that, while it hurts to be so far away, you're seeing what a solid team is performing like. So now when you're going into your next matchup, and Towson's next matchup will be at number 21, Kansas, where I would imagine they will be massive underdogs. At least they will have maybe a sense of what the pace will look like to keep up with a team, an upper echelon team, even more so than UCF is. So, yeah, they're going to go through a little bit of a tough stretch, but then they'll play the University of Notre Dame, Maryland, which is a very small school right across the street from Loyola. That'll be a nice little tune-up for them before they get into some conference play and take on a team like William and Mary, who we know a couple of years ago were really solid, went through a little bit of a lull, but now they're 8-3 to start the season. So we'll see how they do. I know they just lost to George Washington, but yeah, we'll see, you know, how Towson does when they start up, you know, Coastal play the heart of it against the William and Mary Tribe team, who's been a rival for them.
Yep, and certainly UNC Wilmington looking like the creme de la creme team after they made the NCAA tournament last year. Nice 9-1 start, and been very encouraged by Elon this year as well. They were actually up 50-15 at the half against Wofford. We've seen a little bit of ups and downs there, but for Towson, despite the losses, coming against good competition, I feel pretty encouraged there. And on this podcast, I'm always encouraged when you're aboard, Chris, because you do such an excellent job on so many different fronts, whether that's taking a look at the news happenings, taking a look at some baseball, college basketball, you do it all out there. So let the good people at home know what's all on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
The happiest talking sports with you, bro, but I do certainly love delivering the news to the people in Baltimore, and I'm doing that on WBAL News Radio. I will be part of the pregame coverage leading up to Army-Navy, at least as far as on the news side. I would love to eventually get to the field, be on the field at M&T Bank Stadium. Tried to go with my wife. Tickets were $338 for one. So I am not there as far as my budget is concerned, paying for Army-Navy tickets this year. But I'm looking forward to being part of WBAO and what we're going to be bringing as far as the broadcast there. And looking forward to hopefully covering a Ravens team that's going to be performing a little bit better. I know that they're going to be rooting for this Steelers team to lose to the Dolphins on this next Monday night if they want to have any shot at the division. But, yeah, just delivering the news, talking sports, and enjoying being with you, Greg. Thank you.
Absolutely. Chris doing an incredible job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. And every single time he joins me, he lends such great insight. So big thanks, Chris, for joining me on Cause he's still part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast. They give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this college basketball Monday as we have some bank shots. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Eats with myself, Greg Eats Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Always a pleasure to be joined by Chris Sheehan. He does great work over at WBAL in Baltimore, taking a look at everything out there in Charm City, from baseball to college basketball to all the news happenings, you name it, he does it every single time he joins me, lends such great insights, and did so once again today. So a big thanks to Chris for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on all six games on the betting board for this college College Basketball Monday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /X feed at GUnit_D1. It's actually quite easy to go in time order today because we've got six games. They're all on the extra games board, so no extra game sounder for this one because they're all just right there. But you know what? How about if we do get things started with 306-529, 306-530? Penn is going to be playing us Lafayette. Lafayette is between a 5.5 to a 7.5 point dog. Total on this game between 152.5 to a 153.5. I did set a total of a 147.5. I'm in on the under. You've got a Lafayette team that's hovering right around about 275th in terms of points scored on a per possession basis. Now, Penn is 6th in the country in terms of their 3-point shooting percentage. I do think that that goes a little bit southward, and certainly a team that has pushed a little bit more tempo than a season ago. They bring in Fran McCaffrey. They're up to about 163rd in the country in terms of total possessions per game. You got a Lafayette team that is right now hovering right around about 250th, and for this Lafayette team, last year they had Justin Vanderbond down low, who was able to give you 2.5 plus blocks. He was able to really manhandle things down low. Now they just don't have any size whatsoever, and that's how you can really undo this Penn team. So I did set Penn as a 9.5 point favorite. I'm going to be one to lay. Now on the Lafayette side, you've got two nice scorers, Caleb Williams, Andrew Phillips. These guys have been able to combine for about 32 points per game, and Mark Butler has been around the block, has been able to give you about 3.5 assists per contest as well, but team is outside the top 225 in terms of ball security, and they're just not knocking down their interior shots. They're outside the top 320 in terms of their two-point shooting percentage. Honestly, a team that doesn't do a bad job shooting it from three at 36%, and this Lafayette team is allowing teams only shoot about 32% from the outside, so I do think that Penn experiences a little bit of regression with that three-point shooting, but I just flat out think that Penn is going to be the more efficient offense in this one. It's a Penn team that is a top 150 team in terms of percentage of their missed shots that do result in an offensive rebound. They themselves have been pretty good at being able to guard the arc. Teams are shooting less than 33% from three against them, and you're going to have the best scorer in this game in Ethan Roberts. 20 points, 4 boards, 3 assists, shooting about 45% from three. TJ Power is a former top 25 recruit and shooting about 40% from three. Couldn't get out there on the floor at Duke or Virginia, but he has found a home here. 15.5 points, 8 boards, and then Augustus Gerhardt has done a nice job pounding the boards as well, 7 rebounds per game, 3 of them being on the offensive side of things. I do think that things are going to be at a little bit more of a moderate tempo in this one. We've been noticing this Penn team, other than really that game against Hofstra, they've been able to do a little bit of better job with regards to their defense as well. So I do think that things are going to be a little bit more controlled in this one. I did set a total of a 147.5. I'm in on the under. And with Penn, I'm willing to lay up to 9 with them. 306-531, 306-532. It is South Carolina State on the road against Charleston Southern. And Charleston Southern is a favorite here of 9.5 to 10.5 points. 150.5 to 152.5 is the total. And I'm going to be riding the over. Did set my total at a 153.5. You do have two teams that are really looking to push tempo. South Carolina State is 69th, very nice in terms of total possessions per game, and Charleston Southern is 48th. Now, Charleston Southern is not forcing any turnovers whatsoever. As a matter of fact, out of 365 Division I teams, they are 365th in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, but they do go up against a South Carolina State team that they themselves have just all sorts of issues on both offense and defense. This is a unit that is outside the top 280 in terms of both points scored and points allowed on a per possession basis. Honestly, they don't have the world's worst facilitator in Jaden Johnson. 3.3 assists, 1.3 steals, 8 points per game. This team, other than Owen Bronson, the lone guy that's giving you double figures, 13 points on 39% 3-point shooting, he's the lone guy on the roster that shoots above 30.4% from 3-point range. A big giant issue. You have a bunch in South Carolina State that is allowing teams to grab over 39% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound as well, and I recognize that Charleston Southern might not have the monsters of the Midway with regards to their defense in terms of two-point shooting defense, but they do have some shot blockers on their team. You've got Reese Jones, who's been able to give you about 2 blocks, 6.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game. Jesse Heffemeister has been able to give 10.5 points, 5 boards. You've had Bryson Blaine, who began his career at the Division I level, went down to the D1 ranks, dominated there. He's dominating right now for this team. 20 points, 8 boards, 4 assists. He's been able to shoot darn near 39.5% from 3-point range. You've got a Charleston Southern team that has been shooting overall about 34.5% from 3. That goes up to 43.6% from 3-point range at home. And South Carolina State is 343rd in the country in terms of opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. Pair that with the fact that Charleston Southern should get all sorts of second and third chances, and they've dealt with a few injuries. Alan Sumner, Luke Williams, they've been a little bit in and out of the fold. Loyola, but Williams should be all good to go. 11 plus points in three of the last five games. South Carolina State has always been a little bit of a whole is greater than the sum of its parts approach sort of team, and they lost pretty much eight out of their main 10 guys from the season ago. They have not replaced any of what they had down low with a single guy that gives you over five rebounds per game. Should be domination in an up-tempo game for Charleston Southern. Set Charleston Southern as a 13.5-point favorite. I'm willing to lay it, and I'm in on the over. I set my total at a 153.5. 306-533, 306-534. You've got Grambling, and they are going to be on the road against Southern Miss. And Southern Miss is a favorite of 7.5 to 8.5 points. Total on this game, it is 139.5. And I did set a total of a 143.5, so I'm going to be in on this total over. You've got a pair of teams that are relatively mid-tempo. Grambling hovering right around about 260th in terms of total possessions per game. Southern Miss, they're more in that neighborhood, about 220th in total possessions per game. But that said, you've got a pair of teams that are equals with regards to their defense. You've got Southern Miss right now 269th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. Grambling is 268th, but what the Southern Miss team is doing a really good job of is being able to pull in their second and third chances. As for Southern Miss, they are rebounding 37.7% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound. That is a top 20 mark in all of college basketball. And for Southern Miss, it's a little bit of a top heavy team, but at the very least are out of the Andre Curbelo business, which that's a good thing. You've had Talik Weeks along with Isaac Tavares be able to do a nice job combining for about 36 points per game. With Tavares, he's pulling in their 7 boards, 2.3 steals per contest. You've got Weeks, who's been able to give you a little bit over a steal and a half per game as well. He missed a game or two earlier in the season, but he's back and he's given the team 14 plus points in now 4 of the team's last 5 games. Kurt Lewis was a very highly touted junior college transfer back in the day, shooting about 39.5% from 3, only about 6.5 points per game. I do think that that's going to be improving as the season goes along. And Southern Miss doing a much better job of taking care of the ball than in past years. They're a top 175 team in terms of field turnovers on a per possession basis, and they've done a nice job holding up down low. This team is in the top 75 in terms of opponents' 2-point shooting percentage. They go up against a Grambling team that has left something to be desired with their outside shooting. They're shooting 30.7% from 3-point. And this Grambling team has looked at a pounded inside. Top 50 team in terms of percentage of their shots that come from 2-point range. You've got a Grambling bunch that is now under the tutelage of Patrick Curry, who comes over from Florida A&M. And Roderick Coffey did follow him on over. 8.5 points, 4.5 boards, 4.5 assists. Nice versatility, shooting 44% from 3-point. But with this Grambling team as well, they have just done a bad job in terms of taking care of the ball. 15 turnovers per game. That puts them outside the top 320 in terms of percentage of their possessions that end in a turnover, so that's not necessarily savory. I recognize that it's a Southern Miss team that might not be completely batting down the hatches in terms of generating turnovers. They're a bottom half of college basketball team in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis, but the real kill seal is giving up about 36% from 3-point range, and with Grambling being unable to knock those down, I do think that Southern Miss going to be able to control this game, and with all the second and third chances that Southern Miss is good to be able to get, I do think that they get the job done in a game that goes over the total. Semi-total 143.5. I do like this total over, and with Southern Miss, I set them as a 7.5 point favorite. If we can get to a 7 or less, I'm going to be willing to lay it with them. I'm right now seeing some 8.5s that are popping out there. This actually opened up at 6.5, so 8 plus, that becomes my point on Grambling, as the Southern Miss 3-point shooting defense, little bit of a concern, so going to be willing to take Grambling at 8 plus, and with regards to the total, I'm in on the over. 306-535, 306-536, Texas, they are back to being a favorite as they play host to Southern. Southern is a 22.5 point underdog. 155.5 is the total. And with Texas, I set them as 24.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number. Texas is right now 23rd in all of college basketball in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. And they go into the top 6 at home. They're only turning the ball over on about 10.1% of their possessions at home. Now, this is not a team that's generating any turnovers themselves. They are outside the top 320 in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. So it is an interesting spot. I am on the under, though. I said I told 154.5, mainly because you don't have a Texas team that's really looking to fly. Sean Miller, when he was over at Xavier, his teams were really looking to play up-tempo. This year, Texas more around about 200th in terms of total possessions per game, and you'll look at Southern, and you'll see the fact that they're 11th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. That is a warped set. They play that double overtime game against Washington. Don't get me wrong, they're probably still going to be a top, like, 60, 65 team in terms of total possessions per game, but they're not quite playing that fast. The double overtime game makes things look a little bit different. And for Southern, last year they were a whole is greater than the sum of its parts team. Now they've got a main guy in Michael Jacobs, who's been able to give you 22.5 points, 4 boards, 4.5 assists per game. And Malik Ajabal down low, he comes over from UMass. He's been able to give you 9 points, 8.5 rebounds per game. So They've done a rock solid job with that regard, but it is a Southern team that, even though they've been able to do a relatively okay job on the glass, they are really giving it up from three-point range. Teams are shooting over 34% from three-point range against them, and this is a Texas team that they've been relatively cold from three-point range. You've got Tremont Mark and Jordan Pope both averaging less than 12.5 points per game. That's been a little bit shocking, but it's been Dalen Swain who's been able to give you 15-plus points per game. He's really been the main headliner, and this Southern team, they are 295th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. As a matter of fact, they're on 24th in points allowed on a per-possession basis, 295th in defensive rebound percentage. They are allowing teams to grab over 33% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound, but I do think that the Texas defense is actually going to be able to do a pretty strong and sturdy job. You do have a Southern team as well outside the top 250 in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. They've just been getting a little bit too loose with the ball, and this is a Texas team that currently, they're 136th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Much of that is because they played some rough games at a road slash shoot court environment. If you look at them specifically at home, they've been more of a top 75 unit in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. And really, outside of Michael Jacobs, you don't necessarily have a lot of, shall we say, rambunctious scorers. Cam Membrow, who comes back from a season ago, 9 points. He's been able to give you 3.5 steals per contest. And this is a Southern team that is still really good at generating turnovers. They're a top 45 team in terms of turnover force on a per possession basis. So while Texas has done a really nice job in terms of taking care of the ball, I do think that that goes down a half a notch here. That said, for this Southern team, I do think that they're going to get completely blasted on the glass when you've been able to have a double-double machine from a season ago and Lassine Traore do a nice job hitting the boards. Only about 5 points per game for the Texas team, but he's pulling in 7.2 rebounds per game off the bench. Swain, who I mentioned before, is giving you 7 boards per game. And Matos Volketatis, who comes over from Florida Atlantic, he's been a really nice find. 14.5 points, 6.5 boards with Texas, shooting about 34.5% for three. I think that that's just a hair too low to be able to get the over. Now, Texas is allowing teams to shoot 36% from three. Southern, just not a team that's really getting rambunctious from three, and Texas has been a top 45 team in terms of opponents' two-point shooting percentage. I do think that Texas is going to be able to do a nice job winning from within at a 155 plus. I'm in on the under, and with Texas, I'm willing to lay up to 24 with them. 306-537, 306-538. You got Mississippi Valley State on the road against Kansas State. Kansas State, a 30.5 to a 31.5 point favorite, 154.5 to 155 is the total, and with Kansas State, set them as a 32-point favorite. I am not willing to go past a 31.5, but I am willing to lay a 31.5. I do think that Mississippi Valley State, the fact that this is still one of the most, shall we say, brutal defenses in all of college basketball, 357th, in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, very much going to be hurting them. And this is still a Kansas State squad that is shooting 38.3% from three-point range. That's 33rd in all of college basketball. They are going to be able to light it up with PJ Haggerty giving you over 24 points per game. And for Kansas State, the real question is, who else is going to be able to step up around him? As right now, one of the main men has been David Castillo, who's been supplying the team with 12.5 points per game. He's shooting 43.5%. From three-point range, you've had Abdi Bashir, who was a nice scorer over at Monmouth, be able to give you 12 points per contest. Main kryptonite with this Kansas State team is down low. Nate Johnson is right now leading the team with 5.8 rebounds per game, and he's got good versatility. He's 0.5, 4 assists per game. Johnson stands just 6'3", though, and really, outside of Kamari McGriff, who is 6'8", you don't have a lot of size for the team, but let's call it what it is. You've got a Mississippi Valley State team that they are not going to be bringing at you a bunch of, like, towers or anything like that. As for Mississippi Valley State, they do have 6'8", Daniel Mayfield, who's actually been quite respectable down low, 14 points, 6.5 rebounds per game, and they've got a really nice player, Michael James. He's shooting 97% at the free throw line, 37% from three, 19.5 points per game. Mississippi Valley State was dead last in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, and they're still outside the top 275, but they're a bit more respectable with their offense. They do still get too sloppy with the ball, 17 turnovers per game. That's a bottom 15 mark in all of college basketball, but at the very least, the offense has been a little bit more explosive, and this has been a Mississippi Valley State team that has run quite a bit more. 44th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Kansas State, they're looking to gun it. They're 37th in the country in terms of total possessions per game, and this is a Kansas State unit that has not necessarily been the strongest team defensively. They're not necessarily great at generating turnovers. Right now, clocking in at 185th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. So I think that you get a very high scoring game. I set my total at 164. I like the over. I think the Kansas State and their 3-point shooting against a Mississippi Valley State team that's allowing teams to shoot over 35% from three just blows them away, though. 1-8 to 31.5 with Kansas State, and I'm in on the over. And wrap things up with 306-539, 306-540. Incarnate Word is on the road against New Orleans. New Orleans is between a 1-point favorite to a 1-point underdog. The last game, it is between 150.5 to 151. And I said New Orleans has the 1.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay up to 1 point. point with them, with New Orleans. They've been able to do a nice job with their main men down low, as you've got MJ Thomas, who's like the lone holdover from a season ago, doing a good job in terms of being able to spy on the boards. He's giving you about 8.5 points, 7.5 rebounds per game. And Churchill Abis, who began his career over at Wake Forest and DePaul, and actually saw good minutes at both of those schools, about 5.5 rebounds per game. And Carnegie Ward is a very slow and controlled team. Now, they're inefficient on defense, 344th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. In New Orleans, they are 275th in terms of total points allowed on a per possession basis, but Carter Ward is a slug. 344th in terms of total possessions per game. Now, they're a top 100 team in terms of executing on offense in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, with Davion Bailey being one of the most underrated guards in all of college basketball. In this slow and controlled system, he's been able to just absolutely explode for 21.5 points, 2.5 assists per game, shooting 37% from three. And Carter Ward is shooting 41% from the outside, but now they do face off against the New Orleans team that's allowing teams to shoot 29.9% from 3 points. New Orleans should see some regression with their three-point shooting defense, and Carter Ward should see some regression with their overall three-point shooting. And big thing for New Orleans has been the turnovers. They are outside the top 275 in terms of ball security with over 14 turnovers per game. And Carter Ward, though, outside the top 225 in terms of turnovers generated on a per-possession basis. And I do think that that's going to help out this New Orleans bunch. Now, you've got an Carter Ward team that's also allowing teams to shoot less than 33% from three. And I like Harold Woods coming over from Northeastern. 9.5 points, 8 rebounds per game for this Carter Ward team. And then Taj Stavetsky, who was over at Cleveland State, he's been a do-it-all guy. 18 points, 4.5 boards, 5 assists. He's shooting 39.5% from three. Harrison Reed is right now shooting 57% from three with 10.5 points per game. Do you think that that's going to be going downward a little bit? But it's a little bit of a top-heavy bunch here with Carter Ward. Meanwhile, for New Orleans, even though they've been turning the ball over more than what you'd like, they bring in two really nice guards. Colton Benson from Texas State, Ja'Kavion Buckley from Southeast Louisiana. Buckley was the main point guard over at Southeast Louisiana, and he's been very versatile. 6 boards, 5 assists, 2 steals, 15 points per game, shooting 36% from three. And Benson is just a knockdown shooter. 15 points. He's made every one of his free throws thus far this season. He's shooting 40% from the outside. You've been able to have some nice production out of Pangois. Hopefully I said that correct. He's averaging about 6 points per contest. A little bit of an international man of mystery that comes over from Greece. I do think that the overall size is going to be able to take hold for this New Orleans team. And they've been doing this all with 7'3" Mathak Majak, who began his career over at UMass, spent a little bit of time over at Oral Roberts, missing quite a bit of the season. He should be all good to go in this game. I don't know if he's going to give you a whole bunch of minutes, but I do think that that size helps out New Orleans, and I do think that this is going to be a slow down game. So if I total 149.5, I like the under, and with this New Orleans bunch, I'm going to lay up to 1 with them, and that'll wrap things up for the Monday edition of Coast to Coast Seeps, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Big thanks, Christian of WBAL in Baltimore, for joining me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Seeps, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So, per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via the 5-star review. I'm with you guys every single day on this podcast, give you picks and analysis on every game, every day. So, I'll be back to you once again tomorrow. Thank you.